I love staying connected to our community while they're out exhibiting or attending trade shows throughout the year. And one update that caught my eye this summer was from Biff Ulm of Nice Enough Stickers about his experience at the Las Vegas gift show. Now, Biff is no stranger to the podcast. He's been sharing tips about leveraging point of sale systems back on episode 146. And we did a COVID check-in with him during episode 177, where he shared how things were going for his brick and mortar shop at the time. And Biff and I had a lot to catch up on in this episode, but one thing that stood out was that his observations at the Las Vegas gift show were about product development strategy. He has a lot to say about it, and I'm excited for you to listen in. For background, Biff stickers are now in over 300 stores with 8,000 locations, so he knows a thing or two about creating products that people want to buy. Biff also owns a wildly successful retail shop, which provides him a unique viewpoint as both a wholesale buyer and seller. In this episode, we discuss the importance of patience, iteration, and customer feedback in developing successful products. We also discuss how to leverage data and understand buying behaviors. Today's episode is brought to you by our Email Marketing for Product Makers Guide. If you have ever struggled with having a consistent email marketing strategy, maybe it's because you're not sure what to say or when to send the emails or how often to reach out to your customers, whether it's wholesale or direct-to-consumer customers, well, if that's you, we have the perfect tool for you. Head to proofyourproduct.com/email marketing. You can grab my free guide there. And this guide has helped hundreds of product makers plan out an entire year's worth of marketing emails in 1 hour. This guide, plus the optional training that you can buy if you want it, will help you create a strategy that works for your specific business. Again, that's proofyourproduct.com/email marketing. Download that free guide and get started creating your email strategy. I'm Katie Hunt, wholesale expert, business strategist, and mom of four. I'm also the host of the Proof to Product podcast. Since 2011, I've coached thousands of brands whose products can be found on the shelves of indie shops and big box stores all around the world. If you are a creative entrepreneur that makes and sells physical goods, you're in the right place. Here on Proof to Product, you'll learn new strategies for product development, sales, marketing, and more. It's like your weekly dose of business school, and we're going to help you confidently grow your revenue in your own way and at your own pace. So let's get started. Welcome back to Proof to Product, Biff. I'm so happy to have you.
I am super excited to be here. It's been too long, Katie.
It really has. You know, I was looking back just because I wanted to check in on which episodes it was that you were on previously. You were on the podcast twice in 2020. The first one was episode 146, where we talked about leveraging point of sale systems. And then you came back later that year to kind of give us a COVID check-in with your retailer hat on about like how retailers were doing and what was going on. And that was so informative and helpful to folks. So, but so much has changed since then. What have you been up to? Give us the update.
Yeah, I know. I looked that up too, actually, because I was curious. And I'm like, yeah, that's 4 years ago. And it does not feel like 4 years ago at times. It just
not at all.
Like it was yesterday that we were chatting. Yeah, a lot has changed. So I am living completely on the wholesale side of things. That does not mean I speak fluent retailer still. So yeah, I cannot avoid thinking like a retailer. That's for sure on that side of things. But no, our business has just taken off on the Nice Enough Sticker side of things. We're currently serving about 300 stores and 8,000 locations. And I can't complain. It's been a wild ride and I'm really enjoying it.
Fantastic. I'm so pleased to hear about your growth. It's always, you were a member of our labs community for a long time and you poured into so many of our community members and just the way you think about things, the way you structure your own business, it's very inspiring. And so I'm just happy to have you here today and to reconnect with you. So thank you again for your time.
Thank you.
You know, you were recently at the Las Vegas gift show, among other shows, but you were sending me an email update about Vegas in particular, and you shared some information about observations that you were having about challenges that you think product business owners are facing right now. And one of the things you brought up was product development strategy. Can you tell us a little bit more about what you saw at the show and just feedback that you give to other product creators who are listening right now?
Yeah. So I was using national sales reps for a while. Well, no, I still have national sales reps. I shouldn't even say that. But I got into a season where I wasn't going to the shows. And I wasn't getting that feedback and just even hanging out with other vendors and all of that type of thing. So I decided it's so important as a leader and a person who's going to put the direction of your company to show up at times. You have to delegate as you're scaling, but there's got to be a time where, yeah, you've got to just be in the trenches too. So I was at Dallas, Atlanta, and Vegas, and yeah, just tons of conversations. But I talked to, a lot of times people think as a show, we're just there to sell, maybe if it's been your first show, but a lot of times there's downtimes. It's just like it happens in retail too. There's times where you have a lot of customers in your booth and then it's like crickets for 15, 20 minutes. And then you could go for 45 minutes where you're selling like mad and then it tips down. So we get to talk to reps, we get to talk to other vendors and all of that. And no, I did hear a lot of people that they're just kind of struggling with the whole idea of how do I take my business to the next level. Mm-hmm. And we're fortunate enough, we've been at this a little while. So it's 8 years of wholesaling right now where, yeah, I'm not the most senior, but I have a little experience under my belt and we have scaled.
You have scaled and you have a lot of experience, and you also have a unique point of view in that you do come to this having a very successful retail brick and mortar shop too. Yeah. So when you are wholesaling, you can see the other point of views of the shops you're pitching and talking to. And I think that's a huge superpower. What kind of conversations were you having about this product development and people feeling like, how do I expand or how do I create viable products that customers actually want to purchase? What kind of talk was happening there?
Well, I think it's really hard to, and maybe it isn't even, we had the conversation, but as we got dug deeper, the conversation presented itself.
Mm.
Does that make sense, Katie?
Yeah, definitely.
So it's kind of embracing that beginner's mindset continually. Like the idea that products today, what is going to be really popular today will evolve and change with what's going to be popular 6 months, a year, 18 months from now. And that's something that we just have to say, frankly, we're a question that is constantly has been proposed to me is like, when do you get on top of it? When does everything just automatically run? And it's like, yeah, things can get smoother, but we have to be, if you want to be in this business, my mindset is you've got to be one who's just really comfortable with embracing change.
Yeah.
And because it is, it's constantly evolving. And right now, I think it's like managing an octopus, I say, on wholesale. We have reps and we have showrooms and we have fair and we have our own B2B site. We have our own customer outreach. And each one of those arms are super, super important. But we have to manage them all because retailers, quite frankly, have so many more ways to reach us than they did, say, 10, 15 years ago. And the customer wants to be reached the way they want to buy and when they're ready to buy.
Yep.
So just to have an honest conversation with the fact that it is going to always be evolving.
Yeah.
And managing that evolution is so, so important.
Yeah. I love the analogy of the octopus arms because that is 100% true. We need to meet customers where they are. And it's hard. We don't have a crystal ball. We can't know exactly when they're primed to buy. I mean, we know seasons and all of that, our buying cycles. But in terms of, certain buyers like to buy at night. Some like to buy during the day. Some people want to shop in their pajamas. Some people want to shop online. Some people eat. The differences amongst retail shop owners is so different. And it's hard to really know how to capture them. So we have to cast the net wide. I also love what you said about the agility factor of being a product-based business, that there are systems and processes and foundational pieces that we can put into place, and we should have those in place. But with regards to the creative side of thing, the product development side, and even some of the sales and marketing, we do have to be constantly evolving and thinking about, okay, what's new in the market? And I'm not talking about chasing trends necessarily, because I feel that, this is my own personal opinion, I feel like if you're chasing a trend, you're kind of too late to market with that one. But also thinking ahead of, what am I interested in? What do I see happening in the marketplace? Kind of just being aware of what's around you. Do you kind of agree with that?
I do agree with that. I also think it gets easier and harder as you have more customers.
Tell me more.
Well, because what gets easier is we're very, very customer focused. Honestly, If we strip all this away, in my opinion, what we're looking for is we want products that customers love, the end customer, right? And if there's a metric that I probably look at more than anything, it's the reorder trends.
Mm-hmm.
Because we can introduce a new product. Buyers are always excited about new products. So that's a, I don't want to say it's an easy sell, but new is a relatively easy way to get reorders. But what we really want to see is those items that are just continually being reordered, and they're being reordered in quantities that are awesome. I don't know how to say it in any other way.
Yeah.
We have designs when we're pulling our reports and whatnot, like there are certain SKUs in the last quarter that we sold 15,000 SKUs of. And then there are certain SKUs that we only sold 1,000 SKUs of. So it is constantly trying to push it up into that the numbers kind of tell you the story. So the more data you have, but it's an intuitive process of what the, like you say, what the next thing is going to be. So we're trying to guess. There's not a lot of data with like, why did this design relate to people? What did they find this to be more authentic in what, in that piece? That's always difficult.
It is difficult. I love that you're talking about the data points and driving your decisions for what you're creating, the type of art you're making, and the type of product categories that you're pushing further into. I mean, I know you're mainly a sticker company, but leveraging the data points to say, okay, these ones are doing really well. We're selling a lot of these. What else can we make in the same vein for the same customer that's going to appeal to? I know you can't tell if it's like the design or the sentiment or whatever it is, but you can kind of extrapolate, well, let's test some things. Let's experiment and see what might also tie to this.
Yeah. And I think too, one thing that I do every now and again is I just get into the retail store for a day. Anywhere we can put ourselves in front of the end customer and hear honest feedback and get really vulnerable with our product, it's really meaningful. And even at a show, sometimes you can do it. You can kind of give people space to kind of look. You can see that they're intrigued and just listen to them, like really listen to what they're like. Oh, I like this one, but it's those buts that have all the really golden nuggets of information. If they tell you like how they want to tweak it or that type of thing, and don't get caught up. If you hear one person, like it's no big deal. Every company can't be for everyone. So if someone's like, oh no, I just dislike that, that's not a problem if you're making sales. But if you keep hearing things over and over and the similar things, we have to take note of that and we have to take action.
Yeah. Well, I loved going to trade shows. And I loved, as you said, standing back and observing. I would greet people, let them know, hey, look around. If you have any questions, we're here for you. But letting them wander and just paying attention to what they were looking at, what they were pointing at, and like acknowledging for a friend that was with them, or the questions they would ask, or the feedback, as you said. And I really love too how you framed that. If you hear it once, listen, but don't necessarily overhaul your entire line based on the feedback of one person. But if you start to hear that same feedback time and time again, that may be a signal to make some changes.
Yeah, I just agree 100% with that.
Yeah. But giving them the autonomy and the space to walk around your booth and really truly listen, I think it's incredibly valuable. And that goes for folks that are going to retail markets too. The end consumer is going to give you a lot of, you're going to see what they're laughing at, what they're, you know, pointing out and all of that. So I think it's incredibly valuable.
Yeah, I think people who are starting with maybe a, like, I don't even know what the proper word is. So excuse me, I don't want to be derogatory or anything, but if you're selling direct to consumer, say at a pop-up, that type of thing, I do think it's easier to iterate.
Yes.
It's a lot more work and the sales potential isn't quite what it is in wholesale. But if I were starting out, and that's kind of how we did it inside our own retail store. So there was so much iteration and we failed. Like we failed continually. And that's where I say kind of, I mentioned or started to mention is that beginner's mindset. Think of it, like if you've never cooked something or you've never, I don't know, I'm watching the Olympics right now. And it's like, even though I'm like past the age where I could be an Olympic athlete, it still intrigues me. Like it motivates me to maybe try something new.
Yeah.
But you're going to fail.
Mm-hmm.
That's okay. But we can leverage that risk, especially early on. Yeah. And then as we get bigger, there does become more, again, it becomes easier because we have data sets. And when you start seeing, you can notice sales trends and you can pull that. It's awesome. But you have to create it a quantity
Mm-hmm.
That the risk increases as you're serving more customers too.
100%. I always tell people when they come to Paper Camp, you can play on the retail side. The retail side is where we can experiment. We can add new products kind of on a whim, whether it's online retail or even, you know, in-person markets and things like that. And you can, as you mentioned, that's where we can do a small test run and see if it works. If it fails, it's not that big of a risk. But once you've decided that something is working and we do move it to the wholesale side, you're right. The risk becomes greater because we're housing inventory. We're holding more cash in inventory, right? There's the more cash flow issues that come up, or not issues, but just considerations. Okay. I know there were some, you mentioned that you heard chatter about people are feeling frustrated with their growth trajectory.
Yes.
And I'd be curious to hear what you're saying. I'll tell you what I'm seeing, and then I'd like to hear what you're saying. I'm seeing a lot of people who are expecting wholesale growth to happen very quickly, that they are expecting to get into key accounts or work with large sales rep groups or be in hundreds of stores, and they're expecting it to happen very quickly. And I'm also seeing a misconception of if I get on fair, then I will be successful with wholesale. And going back to your Octopus example earlier in the episode, it requires more than just being on one platform or having one sales channel to be successful with wholesale. And so I think there's a little bit of a disconnect in terms of the expectations that folks have, especially when they're newer to the wholesale world.
Yeah.
But talk to me about what you were hearing in terms of trajectory. I mean, you were talking to a lot of brands who have been doing this a little while, and also they're investing in going to trade shows. So they're clearly invested in the wholesale side of their business.
Yes. And we saw quite and I talked to a diversity of people on that. I talked to some very established accounts that, they're rocking it. And I guess that's where I've had questions. And this is where this conversation comes in. I've had a really, really stellar year in retail. My wife is rocking it. She's managing our retail operation right now. And she's been breaking like month after month. We've been in business since, I got to look at it. It says on my, I'm drinking out of one of the cups for our store, but since 1948, that's our main retail store. It has been there. And so we have that type of data set to pull on, but we're having a banner year where it's month after month. And I'm pushing to, and I hate to drop numbers because like there's other, we're all somewhere in this journey, right? But I broke that 7-digit figure a few years ago, and I won't hit 8 this year, but I've got 8 figures.
On your horizon?
On my horizon for 2025.
That's amazing, Biff.
Just to put it in context, there's a lot of people in different development type
of course
areas on that. But I think that we have to look at, it feels like with FAIR, there are a lot more options. There's a lot more people in our market.
Yep.
And when I look at it, it's really, how is your product standing out? I sometimes hate the word authentic just because it's overused, but it is like, how are we authentically approaching customers? And one thing I would ask anyone is like, when you create a design, are you researching what is already out there too? Mm-hmm. Because there's a lot of times that I think, oh, I've got this really original idea, and then just pop it into the FAIR search engine and like see what comes up. But I was working with another retailer and I saw this design. I'm like, I'm looking at these designs and I'm like, I've seen all these designs as a buyer.
Yeah.
I've seen it, and it's going to be really hard because anyone who's an experienced buyer has probably seen it too. And that was a conversation that we had, and it wasn't an easy conversation, but they're like, hey, can you just give me some feedback here? And I'm like, your designs are great. Your artwork's great, but the words that you're using with them, we popped one into FAIR and it 5 pages popped up.
Yeah.
So there has to be, it's really, this is where it's harder because this isn't the data side of things necessarily, but it is that thing where we really, really have to lean into some differentiation. And I know I spent some time in photography as a professional photographer too. And a lot of people define themselves as, what do you do? I'm a photographer. And I'm like, no, you're not a photographer. It's the same. I'm a wholesale business owner. No, you aren't. It's that accumulation. It's the sum of experiences is what you are. And people are looking for a unique perspective for you to bring to them that they want. So we've got to lean into like your travels, your favorite foods, your whatever, and like hone into what is that common experience in your product design.
I love that. Absolutely. I appreciate you bringing up the example of design maybe different, but the copy used on a product might be the same. And reminding folks, go search, go check. It's okay to design in a silo so that you don't feel influenced by anyone else. But before you release it to the market, before you invest in running inventory for anything, definitely go check to make sure that nothing is too similar to another brand, because it's just a tough situation when that happens and you don't want to get stuck.
And there are trends where people are using, like, probably live, laugh, love, right?
Yeah.
How many, you could walk through a market and you're going to still see that. And it's kind of it's a joke. Do a spin off of that. So we have a sticker that's live, laugh, Lexapro. So you know what I mean? There's ways to twist it into your own experiences in that.
Definitely.
But I do think, you know, like when we're into marketing, just very, very basic. And just for people out there, I have a 4-year degree and with an emphasis in marketing. So I can get geeky with it too. But we have the product. There's the 4 P's of marketing. You've got your product, your price, your place, and your promotion. But really, the deeper I get into this, I really think it's the product that's going to stand out. And that's what you do so great. It isn't fast, but if we're constantly listening, constantly evolving, it's a really, really fun place to operate in.
Absolutely. Time and energy are limited resources that all of us have. And yep. I feel like as business owners, we constantly have to prioritize and delegate and also completely ignore some things that are on our to-do list so that we don't get burned out. I know that this has been something you've been working on. It's something you were talking to me about in your email. But like, what advice would you have for folks on how to prioritize, delegate, and also maybe what to ignore so they're not getting bogged down? Because as you were mentioning, the growth trajectory is tough right now. But I also think a lot of us are distracted by all the things that keep falling on our plate as the CEO and the hats we're wearing. So how do you decide what to prioritize in your business?
Well, I'm going to tackle this a little different, but I will circle around. Like, if I don't answer the question, Katie, hold me accountable here. So
okay.
A, get off social media. I can't, I don't know. But stop looking at other people in the industry. And not completely. I don't want to say in absolutes. It's important to know what's around us, right? And where we position, but not on a daily basis. You just don't need that. And you are going to have a never-ending to-do list. For us personally, it's all customer focused. The customer is always going to be first, right? So there's some things that are going to come on your plate, or people are going to present opportunities even, and it's okay to say no to people. And as my wife says, I can't just say no. She's like, no is a complete answer. I have to write like 4 paragraphs why I have to say no. And I think that's something that business owners do a lot of times, that we have to justify what we do. But as we've been growing, no is an okay thing, because you're going to get customers who come to you like they want custom. They want one of a kind. They're going to ask for all types of things. And it's okay if that doesn't align. It's going to take away from serving other customers. We got to look at it as a whole.
Yeah.
And I need to move all of our customers in a forward trajectory, not just one or two on that side of things. But I would say you got to get a money-making machine, and it kind of comes back to it. There's no mission without money. And to have a healthy relationship with that, so that when we're in a place where we're getting bogged down, that we can honestly afford to outsource it, expand our team, and do that type of thing. It's just imperative.
Yeah.
On that side of things. There's things I don't like to do, but I will never ask my team to do anything that I haven't done. Mm-hmm. So I will, if we're developing a new process, personally, a lot of times I will get into the middle of that process, and then I will allow them to take it from there, because I want to see just firsthand where there could be potential bottlenecks and pitfalls, and I won't find anything. And then I let them develop their own efficiencies. And we have that motto that it's okay to fail.
Yeah.
Inside what we do, if we can learn from it, especially.
Absolutely.
On that side of things.
Biff, what does your team look like on the wholesale side? I know the retail operations require a different set of team, but what about wholesale specifically?
Yep. So I'll let you know. So one thing, how we leverage risk with product is we are our own manufacturer, which I know that's not super, maybe not super common in this field. It has allowed us though to create durabilities with our product that you just can't, we can do things that these big printing houses can't do. So there's some competitive advantages and differentiations that we've created in that. So I have a production manager. She's awesome. So she will look at what orders are coming in and then she will have production going. And then we have, so that's Denise. She's, like I say, amazing. And then we have three individuals who just do production. They pack orders. They will get inventory built up and do all the things that are required to get orders quick to our customers. Mm-hmm. And then we have kind of funny names. Like everybody gets to pick their own job titles. So Mara's my air traffic controller. I don't like to use filing cabinets. I'm not good at it. You'll know where I am because there's stacks piled up. But Mara's husband's a tattoo artist and she's used to dealing with creatives. She's my right-hand person. So she'd be in a formal situation, maybe executive assistant or whatever, but she can pretty much do anything. She can take care of communication when I'm not in the studio. And we've worked together. She's been my longest employee. Awesome. So we just know how each other works on that side. And then, and then I have two national sales managers. And then we work with rep groups. Ann McGilvery is my primary rep group. And then I've got Sugar Bee out of Seattle. And we've got about 85, 90 sales reps through those rep groups on that size.
Through those two. That's incredible. Incredible. Okay. Having been to all these shows and seeing like having conversations with buyers and reps and brands, what kind of trends are you seeing for 2025 in terms of what people are talking about at markets?
Oh, I don't know. That's a good question.
That's fair.
I think things are in flux right now. Like if we want to talk about general overtrends, I could talk easily. Like if people are looking for, again, chasing trends, I think capybara and strawberries right now. Like if you want to chase a trend that, you know, mushrooms have been hot for a long time. And I think those two things are doing that. We had really good markets, but I think we really are feeling that there are so many different ways that people can buy right now.
Yeah. Is that overwhelming to you? Do you feel like you have a hard time? Because you are so customer focused and you do want to meet people where they are. But at the same time, sometimes it's challenging to think about meeting them through your reps, meeting them directly through your site on fair. Is it challenging for you to sell through all those different platforms? Or do you feel like because you have a team structure in place, it's easy?
I don't find that too challenging.
Okay.
I find it challenging to get a customer to honestly communicate to you the way that they want to be served. So that's that. I would encourage anyone in our marketing, most of our marketing, like email outreach, is just opening the door and telling customers we will meet them where they're at and inviting them to talk with us however they want to communicate.
That's awesome.
I think a lot of people, like, this is what I'm concerned with, is like a lot of people, especially when you're in, this is something I've noticed, and maybe even sometimes trade shows, they find it unapproachable. They're so used to ordering something and it just comes that they feel like they're bothering you if they're reaching out. And I think, and one thing that we try to do is it's really like that 80-20 rule or whatever. Curation is so, so important.
Yeah.
So like we have almost 600 items in our 600 SKUs in our line, right?
Yeah.
But there's some SKUs that stores should not buy. It's for a very regional area. Like I have a 747 airplane sticker. No one should buy that, except I've got some airport stores that sell the living daylights out of that thing. So it exists in that line. And if we had someone who was an airplane museum or whatever, it would make sense, right?
Right.
But a lot of times we want to help customers not get in their own way, because I think that there's a lot of limiting beliefs out there from buyers and wholesalers. And it's like our number one selling sticker right now is a cat. I don't know why. I don't argue why, but, and she's been top of the chart. This cat has been on the top of our charts for almost a year.
Wow.
And I have buyers to this day that will tell me, I don't really like cats. I don't want to sell them. And I just want to like, it isn't about us a lot of times. And even what I do, there's got to be balance. I got to produce something that I'm proud of and that I would want to put out into the world.
Yep.
But at the same time, it isn't about me. It's about the customer and if they relate to what we're putting out there.
Yeah.
So So yeah, that's probably the biggest challenge is just getting people to talk to us in a really authentic way. And we'll always be there.
Yeah.
And I think that's where a lot of success has come, because when you do start talking to customers and what their real needs are, we've solved some problems that have been speed bumps that have prevented other people from buying from us.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
It does make sense. I was also thinking about it from the standpoint of there's a lot of folks who are pitching retailers and they never hear anything back. They just hear crickets, crickets, crickets. Yep. And I think there's a lot of reasons for that. I think from a buyer's side, they're getting inundated with a lot of communication that not feel authentic, as you're saying. You know, it may not feel like a real human-to-human connection. But also there are brands whose products maybe aren't priced right. They don't have their terms and conditions dialed in. Like, the problem isn't necessarily the pitch they're sending. It's maybe something to do with the line and the relatability, as you say, of the product. So there's a lot of reasons, and it's hard to pinpoint that, right? So I guess my question to you is, like, how are you getting, I mean, obviously you're established, you have a lot of longstanding relationships, but for folks that you're pitching cold that may not already work with you and have a relationship with you, how are you getting them to respond and connect with you and realize that you are trying to connect on a human to human level?
I don't do cold outreach.
Okay. Tell me more.
It's been trade shows and reps was where I started everything on that side of things. And I think that's from a buyer's perspective, because there's a time and season when everyone's ready to buy, mm-hmm. and trying to get through on an email inbox.
It's tough.
Is really tough. If we do it, I'm going to say this. We do very, very limited cold outreach. We've tried it and we've gone to mail. For it.
Yeah.
Because mm-hmm. nothing has, and we send a packet. It's expensive to send. It's like a $15 to $20 packet with all types of samples. Like, you open it and it's an experience, but that's the only way we're going to grab attention, is to really, really stand out. Because I can tell you, I still have my retail email and I'm on 8 million lists. Like, it's insane the amount of email that comes through there.
Yeah.
So if you have a product that really, really, really stands out and I've never seen it before, I might slow down as a retail buyer,
yeah.
But it's got to be something super different.
Biff, I'm so glad that you're bringing this up, because what I want to kind of like mirror back and for our listeners is that you are putting yourself in places where you can make that human to human connection. So yeah. You have hired sales reps that you've worked with for a long time who are going out to the shops or building relationships that you're kind of leveraging, you know, through them. But you're also going to these trade shows where you will meet people, whether or not they become your instant customer or not, is who knows what's going to happen there. But you have an opportunity to connect human to human.
Yes.
Rather than relying on just cold outreach pitches or email or these other pieces, which are a good nurture tool and they are a good way to connect and find new accounts if you don't have the budget to go to shows or you don't have, you know, the experience to work with reps. But at the same time, it's harder to cut through that noise, the digital connections there. So this is really enlightening, and I appreciate you sharing from experience as somebody that's been a buyer, but also a seasoned wholesaler.
We use email. Like, don't get me wrong.
Of course you do.
Email's great, but our email list is someone that we've had a personal contact with.
Yeah.
And we have a big email list, and you're not going to close everyone. Yeah. And you know this, I know that you teach this. Even big accounts move really, really slow, mm-hmm. really slow. And you may even pitch them 3, 4, 5 times before they do on that type of stuff. So everybody's got a different, so if that's something that you want to do, is like a Barnes and Noble or that size of account. Yeah, I've got one that we're closing on in October, but it's been 2.5 years since our initial.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. I've got a contract and all that. It's good now, but that's what it took. So I would just say to someone, like, it's exciting when you get to talk to those stores, but be patient with it. Don't get overly excited on that. Yeah. It's a good sign that anyone's looking for you. Our stores, like the stores that the retailer that's ideal for us is probably someone who's doing like $1.5 to $2 million.
Mm-hmm.
That independent retailer. Yeah, that's a good independent retailer.
Yeah.
And so we target them. We obviously have accounts that are, maybe it's a side retail business. It's that type of thing, but someone who definitely is earning their main income from retail.
Yeah, for sure.
Where they're going to have staff and they're going to, you know, have lots of lines and that type of thing.
Yeah. I want to go back to what you said about direct mail too. For our listeners, we're seeing a lot of great results in our community from folks that are sending out packages. I think, again, it creates that human-to-human connection and touch point without being in person together. And I think there's a wide array of what you can do there. You could do an experiential package like you're talking about with samples and catalogs and things. And I think that's amazing if you have the budget for it. You can also do a simple postcard and everything in between. But don't underestimate the value of that like tactical outreach as well if you can't be at a trade show or in person with somebody.
I agree. My wife and I share a mailbox, so I get the mail every day. We get nothing in our mailbox. And I have a huge mailbox because we used to get catalogs and it used to be just overflowing with stuff. It's changed and no one's doing that. So
they need to be doing it more.
Yeah. I really, really lean into, and I know this isn't for everybody, but it's where I've had success in all my businesses is really, there used to be a book. I think it's Marty Neumeier or Martin Neumeier. And The book was called Zag. So when everybody's zigging, you should be zagging.
Yeah.
But there is a lot, he's pushing a point to an extreme, but really, if I were to encourage anyone who's starting out, it's like, just lean in. I know it's a scary place, but lean into who you are, that inner voice. I'll tell you, everything I design and I'm like, okay, I designed this for myself and I don't know if I want to put it out in the world. Like I'm scared of it. It sells. It's like, and it shoots up to that. So really being comfortable with that vulnerable place that you're doing something. I do some weird stuff and like lean into the odd, into the crazy, because that's where I really think that there's success to be had.
Absolutely. Oh, Biff, this was fantastic. Tell people where they can learn more about your product line and also your retail shop.
Yep. So we're at niceenough.com. Super easy on that. Our retail store, we're located in central Minnesota. We're in a tourist summer resort area, second home market. It's called Zeiser's. People, it's Z. So it's just like Kaiser, but it has a Z in the front, Zaiser's. We're destination-based. And you know, something, Katie, I hear people talk about too, and I know we're ending here, but have a desire to be in retail versus wholesale. I really like the wholesale side of things. Retail is multidimensional, and I think it's a lot tougher than that. We're fortunate to do really well. But retail, if you are going into retail, get a good location. Like if I could give you any tip, get a location where there's foot traffic, because I did attend a panel on the retail side too, and people just talking about trying to run promotions and events to draw people to their store. Mm-hmm. You need a ton of money, a ton of product to be a destination shopping location.
Yeah.
So if anyone out here, I know a lot of wholesalers like, ooh, that's a dream, is to have a retail store. Get yourself a retail store in a prime. You want to be in the mix of other retailers, and that's going to drive so much success, and then go from there.
Awesome. Great tip as always. Biff, it is always such a joy to talk shop with you. Thank you for sharing so openly and generously today with me and our listeners. We really appreciate you. Thanks for coming.
Thank you, Katie.
All right, friends. I hope today's episode was helpful for you. Biff is always such a generous wealth of information. I appreciate him sharing here on the podcast with all of us. And he was also a featured expert in our latest round of Paper Camp, and we had so much positive feedback from his session. If you would like to hear more from Biff, head to prooftoproduct.com/unlock, where you will be able to get your hands on a set of interview series with shop owners. Biff is one of the retail shop owners that was featured in this series. He and other buyers shared what they are looking for from brands, how their buying patterns have shifted, and they shed a lot of great light on how to best present yourself when you're pitching stores. And the best part, it's only $27. So you can get access to the buyer interview series at prooftoproduct.com/unlock. Thanks for tuning in today. I'll be back next week with a new episode.